The U.S. House has held dozens of votes to either repeal, defund, or otherwise dismantle the Affordable Care Act. President Obama has made it clear that he's not interested in signing legislation that will do any of those things, but the law does remain unpopular, according to most polls. Do you support reforming the law, and what are your ideas for revising it?
Well, I support fully repealing it and starting over. I just think that the law is very flawed. And I believe in free markets. I believe in the miracle of competition. And I think the free markets and the competition have given us the highest standard of living of any country in the world. And we need to let the free market work its miracle in the healthcare sector of our economy. And we need more competition, not less. And competition will always drive prices down. Free market always drives prices down. And I think we have as far as quality goes, Lindsay, I think we have the highest quality of healthcare in the entire world, bar none. So our quality is great. We want to keep that, but we got to figure out find a way to drive the prices down. That's the problem. The average middle class family is getting priced out of the insurance market. They can't. A lot of people can't afford it anymore. I understand that. Our company just had a 73% premium increase in our healthcare prices. So the best proven way to decrease prices while keeping the quality good is through competition in the free market system, which we have not had in a long time in the healthcare segment. The only way that government, by taking over the healthcare industry, will lower prices is through rationing. And I haven't met an American yet that is okay with rationing. So we need to get more competition, free market involved. Prices will decrease while keeping the quality.
You are a businessman from Dubuque and a real estate developer, among other things. How has that past experience prepared you to serve Iowans in Congress?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think we need more small business people in Washington, D.C. I've often said that if Congress had to take an eighth grade economics test, I wonder how many of them would pass it. We just need more people in Washington, D.C. who have met a payroll. And I've met a payroll every single week for 24 straight years, and I'm still meeting a payroll. And I've balanced a budget every month for 24 straight years in business. I think we have the finest small business people in the world, in America. And I think 60 to 70% is the number of new jobs created by small business people. And people ask me, how do we get the economy going? And I say the short answer is, we've got great business people in America. We need to get out of their way, get the government out of their way with burdensome regulations, and get them out of their pocketbook with the highest corporate tax rates in the world. So I think my business background, I understand what makes businesses grow. I understand what makes the economy grow. And I understand how prosperity is created only in the private sector. Government does not create prosperity. It's only created in the private sector. And this economy, Lindsay, this is the worst economic recovery we've had in the history of the United States following a recession. And we need to get this economy booming again. And if we did, we would have 10 to 15 million more jobs, and young people would have tremendous opportunities again.
You're campaigning to join Congress at a time when its approval ratings are at some of the lowest in history, hovering in the low to mid-teens in most cases. How do you think we got to that point?
Well, another good question. I think people are tired of career politicians, and I think, you know, I'm for term limits. I think the founding fathers envisioned people, putting their job aside for a couple of years or 4 years, going to Washington D.C. and serving the country, and then coming back and resuming what they were doing, and. We need term limits, and I'm definitely a term limit supporter. A constitutional amendment to enable term limits, I would definitely support. But I think people, a lot of these guys and women have been in Washington, D.C. so long, they lose touch with their constituents, and they lose touch with reality, I believe. And people are so tired of politicians who speak out of both sides of their mouth. Or after they answer a question, you say to yourself, that sounded good, but what did that person say? And, they've mastered the art of doublespeak. And I think people, particularly in eastern Iowa, are smart enough and adult enough that they can handle the unvarnished truth. And, you know, our country has problems, and they can handle, you know, they can handle a shared sacrifice if that's what's required to handle certain problems or issues like balancing the budget. So I think they're thirsting for genuine, authentic leadership. And it's in short supply in Congress. And I believe I'm one of those people. And we need many, many more of those types in Congress.
One of the other things that this Congress has been known for is their inability to compromise on certain issues. Something that I think a lot of voters would agree is necessary from our congressmen and women. What are some of the areas that you would reach across the aisle and try to compromise specifically?
Oh, I think, you know, I subscribe to the Ronald Reagan philosophy of compromise. And he always said, you know, if we can get 60 to 70% of what we want that advances our principles in a bill, let's sign that bill and we'll come back another day for the other 30%. So if a person doesn't want to compromise, if it's all or nothing, I don't think that person belongs in government, because I think the nature of government is give and take and is compromise, and elections have consequences. And you know, the side that wins, whether it's Republican or Democrat, of course they want to advance their agenda. I want to advance my agenda of liberty and freedom and fiscal sanity, personal responsibility, free markets. So I'm going to, you know, I'll go to Washington D.C. I'll fight for those values. I'll fight for Eastern Islands. But at the end of the day, if there's a bill that has 60 or 70% of what I want and 30% of what I don't want, that's a pretty good bill. I would sign on to that bill. So there's areas that I would work with the Democrats. I'd work with the Democrats. You know, they're good people. They want to help the country. You don't want to go there and fight with people every day. Bruce Braley, I don't agree with him on most things, but I do salute him for his work on veterans and veterans issues. And I would try to continue that effort if I'm in Congress. I work tirelessly on behalf of our veterans and making sure that they're taken care of. And other areas I think you know, I could work quite well with Democrats on would be spying on our citizens in the name of national security. I don't agree with what the NSA is doing. And I think that we need to protect our rights to privacy guaranteed to us in the Bill of Rights. And also, I don't necessarily think we should be policing the world with our Department of Defense. And I think I could work with Democrats on some of those issues. I think we should have the strongest defense in the world, because that's one of the enumerated powers in the Constitution, is to protect us. But, you know, to be involved in endless wars is I don't think it's a good thing. And I think we need to be very, very careful whenever we consider putting our nation's finest sons and daughters into harm's way.
What is one thing that you could do in Congress to help create jobs here in Iowa?
Well, not only create jobs in Iowa, but create jobs across the country. And like I said, this is the worst economic recovery in United States history following a recession. And we need to reduce our corporate tax rate. It's the highest in the world. That's not a good thing. We need to decrease that. It's a global economy. We have to compete globally. And when we saddle American businesses with the highest tax rate in the world, that's obviously not a good thing. At the same time, when we reduce tax rates, we need to reduce crony capitalism. I don't believe the government should be in the business of picking winners and losers, or as someone told me on the campaign trail the other day, of picking losers and losers, because when has the government ever picked a winner? The free market should do that. So we need to get rid of all these corporate loopholes in the tax code and crony capitalism, and big companies like General Electric making $14 billion, that's with a B, a year, should be paying something in United States income tax. 2 years ago, they paid zero. In fact, they got a refund. We need to reduce regulations that cost businesses over $1 trillion a year, and ultimately, those costs are paid by the consumer. And the biggest thing holding back businesses is uncertainty. American business is sitting on a record amount of cash, and they're sitting on it. They're not investing it, and they're not growing and expanding their businesses because of uncertainty. And there's so much uncertainty that surrounds Obamacare. There's so much uncertainty that surrounds this administration, because the administration, quite frankly, is viewed by small business people as being anti-business. So they're very small businesses are afraid to expand because they're concerned that there's new taxes coming down the pike, new regulations coming down the pike, and Obamacare. No one knows for sure what the cost to businesses is going to be of that. So, so much uncertainty. We need to reduce the deficit, balance the budget, up for a constitutional amendment to balance the budget and to limit spending, because all that public sector spending crowds out private sector investment. We need to fully develop American energy sources. We should be energy independent, and we have the ability to be in that. Energy is a big cost of American manufacturers. It's probably their second largest cost. So anytime we can do anything to reduce that, that's going to help American businesses. And lastly, we need lawsuit abuse reform or tort reform, especially in the healthcare industry, where I know many physicians, well, almost all physicians practice what is called defensive medicine. They order tests that are needless, but they just do it to avoid being sued. And so tremendous billions of dollars being wasted because of defensive medicine practices caused by nuisance lawsuits. So if we do any one of those things, it's going to help the economy in Eastern Iowa. Hopefully we can do all six or seven of those things I mentioned, and I think we could get this economy booming again, create tens of millions of jobs, and one, like I said earlier in the interview, create opportunities for our young people, because the unemployment rate with the young people is around 20%, 20 to 25%, and that's not good.
Speaking of business climate, a March poll shows that 65% of those that participated support an increase in the minimum wage. Would you support an increase?
Well, if you're asking me, do I want people on the lowest economic rungs to make more money? Absolutely, I do. In fact, I want people on every rung of the ladder, of the economic ladder, to make more money. If when we legislate, though, a minimum wage increase, the Congressional Budget Office, who's nonpartisan, has done an analysis of this and said it will cost around 500,000 jobs. So I don't think our economy is at a point where we can afford to lose another 500,000 jobs. And a lot of those jobs are probably held by young people because minimum wage jobs, it's an entry-level job. It's not meant to support a family. It's not meant to be in long term. I worked minimum wage jobs when I started out, and probably most young people have. And it's an, like I said, entry level, and you're not at minimum wage for long, and you move up. And hopefully, with economic mobility, if we had a booming economy, you know, you'd move up to a higher paying job and more responsibility. So I don't want to see us put 500,000 young people out of a job. I like the kind of minimum wage they have in North Dakota right now. North Dakota's economy is booming, and the starting wage in North Dakota at McDonald's is $15 an hour, and the starting wage at Walmart is $18 an hour. And that's just because the economy is booming. And that's the kind of minimum wage I can get behind because there's no jobs lost because of that. It's just because of a booming economy. We need that in Eastern Iowa. We need that across the United States of America, and we wouldn't even be having this discussion about minimum wage.
There are proposed changes to the renewable fuel standard. Some of them seem to signal that the administration may be moving away from grain-based alternatives to conventional fuels. What would you do in Washington, D.C. to work in a bipartisan manner on energy policy that might benefit Iowans and still have national appeal?
Yes, I was aware of that news, moving away from, I think the Obama administration seems to be moving away from grain-based renewable fuel standards. Ethanol and grain-based renewable fuels are obviously good for Eastern Iowa. They're good for Iowa. So I have lots of my constituents here in Eastern Iowa that their jobs, their incomes, their livelihoods are dependent upon our agricultural economy doing well, and it's doing quite well now. That being said, I'm also a person that believes in the free market, and I don't like to see the heavy hand of government being involved in the private sector. So what I would like to see over time is for the federal government to get out of the ethanol business and get out of the renewable fuels business. I think it makes sense for the government to give some incentives to kickstart these industries or to allow these industries the time to build the infrastructure that's required to you know, to get the new product, the fledgling new product, off of the ground. So that makes sense to me. And I would say, you know, I think we should stay in the ethanol business until we stop bailing out and we stop subsidizing big oil. When we stop subsidizing big oil, then we can stop subsidizing perhaps ethanol. But I can't think of a reason why we should be subsidizing big oil. They don't need our taxpayer dollars. And as long as that continues, then I'm fine with continuing subsidization or mandating of ethanol, because it helps Highlands out.
Even with the former governor heading up the Ag Department, farmers were kept in limbo for years over new farm policies. For example, the farm bill that was supposed to be renewed in 2012 wasn't signed until February of this year. How will you represent the interests of agricultural and rural communities in an environment and from a district that's heavily urban?
I think the farmers' interests are the same as any small business owner's interests. I view a farmer as a small businessman. And they make tremendous investments into their business, and I understand that and get that as a small businessman myself. So to the extent Iowa farmers are small business people, which they are, they have my support, and I'll do everything to try to help them grow their businesses and employ people. And their products are exported, obviously around the world. And anytime a state or a country can be a net exporter is a great thing and helps build our prosperity and build our country and our state's wealth. And we definitely are a net exporter when it comes to agricultural products in Iowa. As far as the farm bill goes, we've stopped direct payments to farmers, which I think is a good thing. Secondly, in the farm bill, I'd like to see the food stamps component of it separated from the ag component. I think the food stamps are probably 80%, around 80% of that total farm bill. So it gets a little distorted as far as dollars go when we talk about it in aggregate, when really 80% of it is food stamps. So it'd be good to separate that and let each program stand on its own. We're using insurance now, yield insurance and price insurance for the farmers. And I think it's good the farmers have a safety net because a couple reasons. One, they're subjected to the weather, and most of our businesses are not subjected to weather. So if they have a severe drought or severe rains, their entire year could be wiped out. And we can't afford as a country to have half of our farmers wiped out in the same year. I mean, that'd be a total disaster. We'd be able to produce enough food. So I think it's good there's a safety net there. I see Senator Grassley opposed the farm bill because 80% of the benefits of the agriculture portion of the bill went to 20% of the farmers, and meaning the largest farms and the corporate farms. And I don't think they need our tax dollars. So I would agree with Senator Grassley on that. I'd like to see the safety net and the majority of the farm bill be going to the smaller family-owned farms.
Nearly every candidate running for office says they want to cut government waste and bring down the deficit. You've said that several times, that you believe in fiscal sanity. What is a department or a program that you would cut, and why?
That's a great question, Lindsay. And yes, I do believe in fiscal sanity. Now, I look at this a little bit differently, perhaps, than some politicians, and I understand human nature. And no one wants their ox gored, and no one wants their favorite program cut. And I think when we start looking specifically at we're going to cut this program or that program, those groups are up in arms and they're protesting and, you know, negative newspaper coverage, and we all know how that ends. What I am in favor of is something called the Penny Plan, which reduces across the board, every program reduces spending by 1%, one penny on a dollar. And I ask people, how much do you think government wastes, federal government wastes? And the estimates are anywhere from 20% to 60% are the answers that I get. So everyone understands there's fraud and there's abuse and there's waste and there's a lot of it in the federal budget. So to cut 1% from every budget is doable. And if we did that for 4 years, just for 4 years, if we cut 1% across the board, we would have a balance. In fact, we'd have a surplus. So that'd be a wonderful thing, and we could cut that 1% just surely out of fraud and waste if we had to. So that's the program I'm in favor of. versus starting to look at specific programs and say, you know, this or that needs to be cut.
Are we spending enough on national defense?
Well, that's kind of, when we say enough, that makes the question difficult. I mean, I'm not a defense expert. If I go to Washington, D.C., obviously I will learn more about it. As I said earlier in this interview, one of the enumerated powers in the Constitution given to the federal government is to protect its citizens. And obviously I agree with that. And as such, I think we should have the most powerful military in the world, because we have the most prosperous the most prosperous country in the world. And we stand for good. And that's obviously a good stance to have around the world. We need to protect our citizens. We should have the most powerful military in the world. Is there waste in the Department of Defense? I'm sure there is. Just like I said, there's waste and fraud probably in every department in the federal government, because it's grown so big and it's to the point where it's out of control. And I don't even think that the president or the cabinet secretaries can even control. When you have 16 or 20,000 employees, and your budget is $1 trillion. I mean, it's incomprehensible to me. And so it's not being controlled. Hence all the waste and the fraud. I'm sure we need to make sure that our military is modernized, that we give our brave soldiers the best equipment, best training they can get. But it's a different world. Different kinds of wars are fought today than they were, for example, in World War II. So we need to make sure, that we're prepared for those types of things. But I don't know how much is enough. We should make sure we have enough to protect the United States citizens and protect our country.
Immigration reform is an important issue to Iowa, but it has stalled in Congress. What immigration reforms would you support?
On the immigration issue, I always answer the question kind of in a two-pronged approach. The first part of my answer is, as a Christian, I have tremendous empathy for anybody that wants to work hard, and a lot of work that illegal immigrants do is backbreaking. And the very, very tough types of jobs. And I have empathy for anybody that wants to work hard to provide for their family. That being said, we are also a nation of laws. First thing we need to do in this discussion of immigration and illegal immigration is we need to secure the border. In 1986, when Ronald Reagan was president, we granted amnesty to people that were here illegally. And we said, that's it. This is going to be the end of it, and we're going to secure the border. And the federal government never followed through, and the problem only got worse. And then in 2000, I think it's 2003 or 2006, I can't remember the year exactly, when George Bush was president, we had a Build Defense or Secure the Border Act, and we were supposed to build 700 miles of a barrier along the most porous areas of a 2,000-mile border with Mexico. 36 miles got built out of the 700 that were supposed to get built. So the federal government's let us down twice. So I say, as a citizen, why would I ever believe the federal government when they say we'll secure the border? I don't believe them. What I say is, secure the border first, let me see that it's secured, and then we'll talk about the rest of the illegal immigration problem after that is done. We need to reform the system. The system is broken, especially when it comes to H-1B visas, when it comes to highly skilled people in science, technology, engineering, and math areas. We need those people. We educate them here in the United States. And then because the system is broken, we end up forcing them to go back to their home countries when they want to stay here. So we need to reform that system. We need to reform the work visa system. I think 50% of the people here illegally have overstayed work visas. So we need a better job of verifying those and checking on those. And then lastly, the people that are here, after we've done these other things, I've heard lots of ideas of things that can be done, such as having them get in the end of the line for legal immigration, or having businesses or families sponsor them. I've heard lots of ideas. So some of them are very interesting and very good. But first of all, we need to secure the border.
According to figures from NASA, 97% of climate scientists agree that climate warming trends over the past century are very likely due to human activity. Most scientific organizations have also issued public statements endorsing that position. Do you believe the science, and should the government act on that issue?
Well, it's interesting. I believe it's. I can see why the average citizen is skeptical about this, and I guess you could put me in that camp. I'm skeptical. I'm old enough, and I've been through this enough. It makes me very skeptical because I remember the 1970s, and there was a cover of Time magazine that showed the polar ice caps of the planet, and it said, you know, we should be. They were thinking about, the scientists were saying, we should spread ash on the polar ice caps, and that dark color, the black color, will absorb the sunlight because we were heading into a period of global cooling, and they were afraid that our planet was going to, you know, become frigid and frozen. That was just in the 1970s, during my lifetime. We go from that to now, of course, you know, global warming, and that's been changed to climate change. So I'm not a scientist. I know most scientists' paychecks come from the federal government, so I guess right away that makes me a bit skeptical. 30 years ago, we were going into a global cooling period. That makes me skeptical. The planet's 4.5 billion years old, 4.5 billion. And I guess I'd say, how long of a time frame does a trend make? Does 20 years, you know, does that make a trend? Because I don't believe the planet's warmed in the last 17 years. So, I mean, is that a trend now? Or I even look at 20, 30, 40 years out of 4.5 billion years and say, is that a trend? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm skeptical. And we have to be very, very careful, when we start talking about regulations in the United States when it comes to trying to regulate climate change, because our economy is barely moving along. It's trudging along. And for any regulations that they put onto business, every regulation hurts. So we just need to be very, very cautious when it comes to that.